Hey, this is Tyler, one of the hosts of RangerCast. On our show, we talk about Power Rangers and other multi-unit spandex heroes. We've got news, reviews, interviews. We talk about the comics, the games, the toys, and all things more phenomenal. Find us at Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or check us out at RangerCast.net. May the power protect you.
Hey everybody, I would like to welcome you to another episode of Pop Culture Gems. This is a series where I, Davis Green, talks to amazing creators, artists, cosplayers, voice actors, and so much more. If you like the interviews with our terrific guests, like, follow, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, the CFG channel. We release Pop Culture Gems on all podcast services and also on our main website, confreaksandgeeks.com. If you like or would like to support the podcast itself, you can always become a CFG member by going to the CFG.com. Store. Today, I am talking to a voice actor who has a cool voice acting history that I've been checking out recently. They have been in several different kinds of anime and video game series. He has played he currently plays Ryusei Shido in Blue Lock, Beat in The World Ends With You, the anime series, Kelvin in Black Summoner, to just name a few. I would like to welcome Van Barr Jr. to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing fantastic, and I got chills. That was a great intro. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh man, thank you, man. I was looking forward to talking to you last week, but like I was saying earlier, I was like, man, I had to reschedule. Had to wait a little bit, you know.
Right up, yeah. Life happens real quick, so I'm happy to be here.
Yes, thank you, man. I know, but anyways, let's get this party started as always. So, anyways, like, what is your story? Like, what got you into voice acting?
Yeah, for me, let's see, it was probably like either late or mid 2017, and I was actually full-time military in the Air Force stationed in Japan. Wow. I know, quite the leap, but like,
I think that is the
kind of a Hail Mary when you think about it, but like,
that is the most, I would have to say that's the most, out of all the voice actors I have talked to, that is the most extreme one, because yeah. Not only that you're in the military, you were in a different country while all this was happening. Oh, wow. Man. Okay.
It's a weird kind of journey, I guess. I started off, and of course, like when you're basically a giant island, like you don't have a whole lot of opportunities as far as like training or even like doing like work. So like I actually got started doing a lot of indie properties, sort of like 6 months or so. It's kind of trying to figure it out, like, oh wait, how does this mic work? So I can't record next to my refrigerator? What's background noise? Like, so it's like for a good, like, it probably took me honestly, probably a couple months to get like my bearing straight as far as like treatment, so it's suitable to actually do stuff in any capacity, let alone a professional one. But yeah, I was working on it. I had a little background in like music production beforehand. Before I joined, I was a DJ in college, so like I did know a little bit of stuff, but like not quite the same like extreme as far as like that. But I was working on it, and then like 6 months in, I actually booked something. And it was a video game. It was like, whoa, wait, what? Yeah, it was Edge of Eternity, which was from this beautiful French studio, Studio Midgar. And I booked a thing. I was like, wait, what? And then I realized, like, wait, hold on. This is on PlayStation? What? Like, what do you mean? I can do that? I felt like I was just playing around. Like, wait, hold on. And so, like, I kept doing it. And, like, the more I was doing it, and like I've had some successes, but of course, when you're starting out, like you're gonna flop in your face. You're gonna learn. You're gonna get better. But like, as I was thinking about it more and more, it's like, wait, this I'm really enjoying this. This is kind of fun. That's kind of neat. I'm on that box. Like, what? What the? Like,
You were the main character. You were the main character in Edge of Eternity.
No, I was the. Are you familiar with the Segia series?
Yeah,
I was basically like one of the mid boss characters on there. It's like so much fun, like full on villainy, just like just really just chewing into these guys. Like it was a good time, and I had so much fun with it. And then like work like that. That I like the hamster wheel was kind of spinning a little bit. It's like, wait, wouldn't it be cool if like I could actually get like easy training without having to hop on a bullet train to Tokyo for like a class with the 10 or 12 expats? Like, so it's like a whole thing. And it wasn't like a spur of the moment decision. It was just like, just kind of like sipping whiskey at a bar. I was like, man, that'd be cool. Like
what the heck? Wow.
Yeah.
It's like you're at a Japanese bar.
Like that'd be really neat.
Yeah, you're like, you know what would be really cool to do? Voice acting.
Yeah. Kinda like it's kinda crazy. And I knew it was crazy, which is why like you know like when like you have like, you know, just like even just like a cool daydream, just like, you know, you just kind of keep it to yourself because it's dumb, it's crazy, it's like insane. But like the more I started thinking about it and how much I was enjoying doing it, like I slowly kind of built up that courage, I guess, to kind of like, hey, you know, I've been doing this for a while, I'm having fun, but I think I want to go to the States and give this a real shot. And then I was like really trying to like I was trying to talk myself out of it too. It's like, I don't know. Then I was making like a 5-year plan. Like, okay, so if I might get some bits in, if I'm like 3 years in there, if I'm over there, then that'd be cool. And then if I'm on the West Coast, then maybe I can go to Bang Zoom and give like that class that I've been looking at that I couldn't do because remote was not a thing back then. Like, not even like, you know what? You know who had a remote class? It was a Steve Bloom. He had a remote seminar. He did it way before COVID started. And like that was the closest education as I could possibly get for voice acting specifically.
Do you know the hilarious thing about that? Like he said that like I talked to Steve Bloom about that, about Bloomhouse and stuff that he did. And then he said that he just wanted to give it a shot to see how it was going to go. Like two live sessions. Then it just blew up. And then, like, I was just like, wow, okay, well, and it's funny because actually I signed up for it like a month ago just to see how it is. But yeah, that is insane. That is insane. Okay.
And you know what? It's like, it's funny, but like that kind of kept the hope alive a little bit. Cause like when you're like stuck on, not stuck, I was having a fine time, but like when you're on an island, literally, and like you're like, you know, you want to do all these things, but like as far as like time zone differences or like having the capability to even get like any sort of like training or whatever, it was kind of a far flung daydream.
Yeah. So,
you know, I decided to like, hey, you know what? And in the military, when like they send you to a base, they go by whatever job you have. Me, my background's like kind of computer stuff. Did a bunch of random things between like my first year was in the UK for a little bit for like special operations support, which is really weird. And then went real geeky and they sent me to Japan after that. In which case I was doing like the long haul infrastructure, getting a little bit of
networking.
Networking. So like the base itself could have internet essentially. But
wow.
Yeah.
That is crazy. And so wait, how long were you in Japan during that time?
3 years. 3 years. And I was working in like a basically this like old like looking Vietnam era bunker. Like like I kid you not, like they'd have like these big old like rusty steel doors, and like if you swung it too hard, it would hear just like this boom, like freaking like I don't know, like oh god, what's that one dude from Resident Evil with the bazooka? Like he's just coming down the hall.
Nemesis or Tyrant? yeah.
Coming down the hall. Like you better hide your kids, Ajawaz. You're going like, but yeah. Oh, so man. So while I was basically stuck down there, the daydream, like it got, I don't know, you know, just
so like when you were
out more.
Yeah, so like when you were there, like how long, like when you decided to, like, I mean, you said 3 years, so like when you decided to, just, you know, shoot your shot on it. Like, yeah. What was that, like, in the middle, like, beginning of it, or just, okay.
2.5 years in, yeah.
Wow, that is incredible. So yeah. So you came back from the military in 2020, a year before COVID?
Yeah, so, like, I was still in Japan, and then, let's see, I got a little sidetracked, but how it works is it's kind of random what base you get, but it goes by your job. So I was like, you know what? I think I'd like to try going back to the States. And they gave me like a couple options that I might be able to get. And then one of them was Idaho. And like, I was trying to go like full big brain on it. It's like, okay, maybe, I see one in California. Maybe I could do that. In retrospect, probably wouldn't have been the best fit. But Idaho is actually really close plane ride to Burbank, which is like an hour or something plane ride. So I was like, wait, hold on. If I do this a little bit, save a little money, maybe I can fly down there for like a weekend thing. And I did that. It was the Adventures in Voice Acting class with Tony Oliver. And I was in there for 2 days, basically spent like the week in Burbank. And then I knew, it was like, dude, this is great. Like, even if I don't like go fully commit to this, like having the opportunity to just like to potentially go down there and like at least dip my toes in the world even harder, like I was content. But man, and then I just kind of started thinking about it more. Like, wouldn't it be cool? Wouldn't it be cool to like do this in like Texas or something? Because like they're saying that like in Texas, it seems a little bit easier to start out, especially in anime. Mm-hmm. And like being separating or being a veteran at the time, Texas handles veterans pretty well. So it's like, hey, maybe that'd make more sense for me. And then I did that. I came to Texas. And for about like 9 months or so, setting up shop, I was doing another gig, kind of networking side, enjoying it, taking more classes than I could, like all the classes I couldn't do in Japan, all the classes, and was doing that remote because COVID kicked off pretty hard around then, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
There is like an in-person class. It was one of them. It was Kyle Phillips, and he had like a team of other directors and things. Austin's Sisk rolled by for one, like all kinds of big names. Wow. And towards the end of it, there is we started off with like a monologue, and I picked one from I took a course with Michael Tatum, J. Michael Tatum.
Yeah,
and yeah, he gave me a nice monologue to chew my teeth into. Delivered that, and I think I did pretty well because like after we did the actual end booth stuff, I felt pretty good about it. Didn't expect anything because I was like, once again, my 5-year plan. He was like, okay, like even if this doesn't lead to anything, like even down the road, just being able to do a couple things, then I feel like I'm on track. But so, like after that class, I got my first audition through Funimation, and it was The World Ends With You. They had all the characters from the original game from the DS. Your Neku beat, Shiki, everybody on there. Yeah. And I was like, man, I know this game. This game was amazing. Like, what's happening? Why is it back? Oh, there's a new game? Oh, man, that's crazy. Then I worked a long time in that audition, like almost 3 hours, just like nitpicking it, like just really just kind of like digging my teeth into it. And man, I booked it. I freaking booked that thing. And that was my first Funimation gig. And it was crazy because, like, I would get called in, and, like, it's peak COVID. They had, like, a security guard in the front, which is, like, the only guy in the, it felt like the whole building. Like, little, like, footstep stamps to where to get to Studio One, which I'm looking at it. And it already came out. They were working on one of the My Hero movies. And so I'm especially anxious because, like, oh, my God, this is happening. This is weird. Okay. And like, oh, you walk in, there's like nobody in there. So you put your headphones on, and I just hear like a voice is like, hey, are you Vanmar Jr.? It's like terrible impression. Terrible impression. It's like, man, that just feels pretty good. Yeah, I'm like, bring it in. You're fine now. But at the time, that was like the first Justin voice I heard.
Is that Justin that was, Cook?
Oh, no, it wasn't Justin Cook. I did eventually work with Justin, though, which was also weird because, like, oh my God. But no, that was now a good friend of mine, Marcus Stimak. He's he does a lot of directing at the moment for a lot of the shows. He does like the network on it, mm-hmm. And yeah, like him, he was working with Kyle, and they called me in on it. And oh gosh, it was crazy because like we did the first episode in studio, probably just because like always new to the area. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, the building's gonna close, we're gonna get a new one. So I guess we'll just call them in physically. Maybe they wanted to confirm I was actually there in Texas.
You're real.
I have no idea. I don't even know. Probably, actually. But then the rest of that show was in this closet booth that I am currently streaming to you right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is so crazy. Wait, so was this at the old Funimation studio, or this wasn't at the new one yet? Okay, this wasn't the transition.
So for people listening at the moment, so I guess there was like two other Funimation studios, right? There's the first one at like a banking building, and then the one I'm talking about was the second one at Grapevine, which you probably seen like a lot of behind the scenes if you're checking out the Blu-rays and DVDs.
That was the flagship though, because originally, when you walk into the pass of the front of the front desk, to your right was the creator of Funimation's office. Yeah. And I remember that. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
That was insane. Yeah.
Surreal. And like, it's especially surreal because like I was saying, like most of the stuff was pulled out. So like all that cool swag was like gone, minus like just the functional stuff for like the studio. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, like doe-eyed, like, wow, this is cool. Hopefully I'll get lost.
That is hilarious. Oh, unbelievable. Man. I have to say, man, dude, that story is insane. It's like, it's the best story I have heard ever on how you got into voice acting.
It's crazy. It honestly is. But yeah, it's like, that's like, oh gosh. Yeah, looking back, it definitely like a Hail Mary, really. I didn't expect to get anything out of it. Like, I just, you know, I just wanted to be in the area so I could work on stuff. I had the potential to potentially work on things over here. And then I was doing it. And it's like, okay, I guess that's faster than I was planning. But I get here.
But then again, though, too, when you think about it, too, like, I've noticed, though, too, that it wasn't like you just kind of picked up a mic and then that was it. You were gradually going through like different kinds of learning as well along the way to kind of improve yourself to get to where you're at as well. Cause like, that's the one thing I think a lot of people kind of miss
with this kind of deal.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand, because like, as far as like getting the opportunity to like work, especially with like active directors, like where else are they going to hear you show your stuff or see your booth etiquette, or like make sure you're not like at least like the wrong kind of crazy, like go to class. If you learn anything from this, go to class.
That's true. That's so awesome. And like you said earlier too, that you said you were in the military and you were stationed in Japan. But when you got your first taste in voice acting, was the VA in your initially in your long term plans, or was it an opportunity that made you want to get in the game like even more?
Sure. It was not in my long term plans at all. I just wanted to have like just some sort of like the ability to just kind of try it and go for it, really. Like, I didn't anticipate being like some like mega celebrity or something, or have any sort of like goals in that mind, or even to be in like the bigger shows. I just like just having the opportunity to just like maybe do it. And then I got way more than I bargained for.
But what got you, like, what made you just get the drive to just say, hey, I got to try this out? Like, what made you just kind of make that decision to kind of jump the shark and just say, hey, let me do it?
Right. Like, I don't, I was looking back and I don't think there was a singular moment. I think it was just like, just over time. It's just like, I don't know, maybe just like slowly kind of like building up a little bit of the courage to just give it a shot.
So it was like, it was just a little voice in your head for a little bit, and then you were just ignoring it when you were in your career. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you just decided to just say, you know what, let me listen to what my insides are saying and then just give it a shot.
That's honestly, that's probably about as close as going to get right there.
Wow. Well, that is, that's even more, because I'm like, usually when it's like, I would have thought like, oh, you listened or you watched something and you've been like, oh, that's kind of cool. Let me look into that some more. Because you know what's funny? I'm also in the networking field. Like I'm a network engineer. Yeah. For, and I'm like, when I saw But when I was going to school and then I tried, I was originally going to do computer science and then I was like, you know what? I don't want to be like a code monkey or anything like that. You know, like, you know, just punching code all day and stuff. And I wanted to see what my other option was. I was like, oh, Cisco network engineering. Yeah. And then I looked into that and I was like, I was doing configurations. I was like, okay, I got to try this some more. But yeah. but like voice acting to you was just like just came in. You're like, you know what? I'm gonna do that. Your intrusive thought just said, okay, let's go.
Yeah, like truly, it's honestly, it's kind of crazy. It's definitely blossomed into way more than I even could possibly hope.
Yeah. Like, hey, I respect it, man. Like I respect the fact that you jumped how you just jumped in and just went and did what you got to do to get better at it too.
Yeah, man. Like, and a lot of it too is like in booth experience, especially working on like dubbing specifically. Like, man, I think my second session was probably, oh God, what was it? It was a couple months later after we were finishing up The World Ends With You, and we were working on, I think it might have been Attack on Titan. I had to look a little bit or something, which was a huge step for me because, like, one, it was in the booth I'm currently talking to you right now, because once again, peak COVID. And then, like, another, it's like, it was on Cartoon Network. Like, what?
Oh, wait, it was Attack on Titan was on Cartoon Network? I don't remember that. Wow.
Or Adult Swim, sorry, Adult Swim. But, like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh, I was like, man, that is so crazy. Dang.
Yeah, man.
So, like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, I guess that's the one good thing that came out of COVID was how the whole AD, like audio, like voice acting, like how voice acting is done now has totally morphed into doing working from home as opposed to going to the studios anymore. Now it's more accessible.
Like, people have been doing this for a minute now. Like, I know, like, COVID kind of put it to the forefront for a little bit, but, like, there are people who, like, had way better setups than I do, who, like, had this figured out for a long time. I know the commercial world, especially, they've been doing it at home for a minute, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, like, one of the few times where it could be like, yep, that prelay show on Disney Channel, yep, they were in their booths, or makeshift closets. And they were working on it, and so
it's hilarious. That's really hilarious. And what do you like to do when you are away from from voiceover work? Like, what's your hobbies?
I guess I'm a little bit of a gamer. I think there's nothing really like really caught my attention. Like, so like for like really got to sit down and like drop 50 hours on it more recently. But like, I'm a little bit of a gamer. And like, I absorb a lot of different media. Was a huge fan of Stranger Things. I was waiting on the next season. I don't even know. Like, for a minute though, like truly, my hobby was going to class.
Oh, really?
That was like my hobby. Yeah. Learning. Yeah, learning. Like, truly, because I enjoyed the aspect of working with other people who kind of have like the same similar either dream or like, you know, like a little bit of like experience in some different areas, different lanes of voiceover. And just being able to interact with them. A couple of my good friends actually met them in class, and we still hang out to this day. Let's have a pizza party with are you familiar with Lexi Nieto?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to talk to her later this week.
Oh, dude. Oh, yeah. We go back like 3 years. Like, we were in the same class.
That's hilarious. That's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. Well, like when you're away from it, are you still like learning? Are you still going to different kinds of classes still to this day?
Not as much of a sprint, because when I did come to the States, I think I've worked with at least like, it was almost like 20 different instructors. So definitely an investment there. But yeah, a lot of like, kind of familiar names you could probably pick out. I wonder if I can even go down my list real quick.
Yeah.
I worked with guys like Richard Horvitz, sweetheart. I worked with,
was Richard Horvitz? He was, Invader Zim. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And hell of a boss right now.
Yeah, for sure. Such a cool voice too. Like, there's someone who took like his instrument like and made his own lane. Like, and if you remember, were you a Power Rangers fan when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, definitely.
You remember Alpha 5?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Richard.
That's him?
That's him.
Oh, I didn't know that was him. I didn't know that was Richard Horvitz.
That's Richard.
Oh,
like,
no.
Richard was actually doing anime back in the day, too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, dude. Like, do you remember it was on, I think this was on Toonami. Do you remember Zatch Bell?
Yeah, I remember Zatch Bell. The weird blonde-haired, like, marionette doll. The
lightning through its mouth?
Yeah.
remember that, like, that horse character with the...
Yes.
That's Richard.
Yeah, Richard's all over the. I didn't know that Richard was all over the place like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, a little bit of anime, man. Like,
oh, and I did see you play a Fall Guys yesterday.
Which was hilarious. Yeah, I was on a brief. I was on a stream with good friends of mine, and we were making fools of ourselves. We were having a good time doing it. So
that's so awesome. And as well, like one thing I've also been loving to see recently as of late was the diversity in voice acting. Now that's is now so much more than ever before. Like for the longest of time. And I would like to know about your personal experience about being like a person of color in the professional voice acting game. Like how has that been so far for you?
Whew, like, oh my gosh. Like back in the day, when you think about it, we didn't really have a whole lot of.
There was no. I mean, we had Phil Lamar.
Yeah, we had Phil. Oh my God. Phil's that's, so cool. I'd love to meet him someday. and like, even in anime, we had like Bo from Cowboy Bebop. Like,
not even, then, yo, Bo Billingsley. Yeah, but that was like one. That was one role. He didn't do anything. He was on and off, but like for a series.
Yeah.
Like, nah.
Yeah, they'd pull people in for like, you know, like the, I hate to say it, but like the token black parts. But like, as far as mainstays, it's pretty rare. And the people who were working were incredibly freaking talented. So it's like, why, you know, it's like you look around, it's like, what are you doing? Like, but now, for me, I feel like I kind of have like a middle upper register in my natural speaking voice, but especially back in the day, like I feel like they only bring in brothers to do like the low parts. And then I found myself having to figure out how can I do that so I can actually work a little bit more. and I'm looking at like guys like Zeno, who like I know like they people ask them to do that low read, even though we know he sits at a medium or medium high. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely my experience for a lot of my indie work. As far as like doing anime,
they're forcing you to kind of go in the lower pitch on your indie works.
Oh yeah, for sure. It kind of worked out in a way because like now I know I can do that. But as far as like when you have to modulate your voice like that, like as far as like being able to do, I don't know, like just kind of like stretch your emotional range on a read, like you're kind of like you're in a little tiny little pipe after that. So you can't. It's hard to like stretch and really like really bring a performance out when you're trying to like pitch it down or even pitch it all the way up. So it felt kind of like I don't want to say pigeonholed, but that fear came up before I even like moved down to Texas like full go. That's like if I'm doing this, I don't want to be just stuck in a shtick or to do that, and I'm happy to report that it's not been my experience, and I'm incredibly thankful for that. They tried me out in a variety of different ways. I'm so glad I picked Texas too, because I feel like there's definitely super like they're on board with like, and like, dude, like, oh man, if you could see like the engineer side and the recording rooms, like, dude, like a good like quarter of the office is black, like maybe more.
Really?
Yeah, I guess. Yes, dude. It's kind of crazy. And like nobody talks about it, but like it's like we're representing in there. That's all I'm going to say.
I just like it because I've seen recently, I mean, I've talked to a lot of different, like the one thing I really love that like, I mean, you even talked to like Nazee Tarsha the other day. And then as well as, I would love to talk to Zeno, AJ Beckles, and like all these different folks. But like, I guess the biggest thing I was really worried about was that the thing I was really worried about is exactly what you were talking about tight casting and then the stereotype and then this and then I've heard crazy stories with stereotyping with black roles originally for voice acting, but now like when I saw you playing Kelvin in Black Summoner, which I had no idea that you were like, I was like, oh, who's Van Barr? Who's this Kelvin? And I looked it up. Right? And I was like, this dude's black. Cool. And like, yeah! I loved it.
Yeah. I try to be low key about it, but that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's like when you like, for, I mean, Zeno's going up. Zeno's probably like, it's really going like it's the top echelon right now in my opinion.
He's got to be like household name, I think. Pretty
yeah, good. Yeah, yeah. But then you got like folks like AJ Beckles did Tokyo Revengers, and I was just like main dude Tokyo Revengers and stuff, and I was just like, this is what I was looking for, because you know how people were getting mad about like, you know, white folks were playing black roles in characters and stuff, and I was like saying, you know what, I wouldn't mind that. If they just gave the same kind of situations for the other way around, you know, because it doesn't really matter. But now that you're seeing it, like more and more now as of now that complaint, I think, is kind of diminishing. I mean, I still think we got a long way to go, but
it feels cool to be a part of like just a smidge of progress, I guess, you know, like it's granted, it's within like 4 years, 4 or 5 years, but like,
yeah,
we're still like, you know, we're still treading along, but man, it's a big difference from not so long ago.
Hey, that 4 or 5 years has gotten a lot further than where we have been like ever, like really towards it. And it looks like it's getting more and more. So I'm definitely down. I'm going to take it. I'll take the semi W for now.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to say it's a full W, you know, we're doing it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, that was my my first not a co-lead, but like a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was on Black Summoner. I played Kelvin the Summoner, and we worked with Jason Lord, who's probably familiar with from his work on Gundam Witch from Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a 12 episode run for the first season of that, and got to do my attack screams and death scythes attacks and things like that, and had a blast. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. That was a fun I love that. That was a fun series.
A good fun random
isekai, because like
summer flavor, and that it was just before Chainsaw came out, so it's like, oh, okay, all right, okay. Y'all watch this, huh?
Oh my god, that's hilarious. Another character you've recently been playing was Ryusei Shido, which I hope there's a season 2 in Blue Lock, but
it's coming. Yeah.
It is okay. I didn't know if there was announced. Oh, thank god. Like you have that you really make him easily hated. Easily hated, yes. But yeah, there you go. I know. It's like the first time you meet him, but then he's like, this cocky son of a yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just wanted to like, how was your experience when you were playing when you played him? Like, what was it that you kind of modeled him towards?
So for Shido's fun. For that, the audition itself was pretty lengthy. They had a bunch of scenes from the manga earlier scenes and kind of like where his arc goes. So I got to like kind of experience that a little early. It's kind of close to what I played in my audition. It did kind of like when we worked with Rig, the director for that show, love Rig. He kind of like guided me along the way, but for Shido, I'm especially excited because he's one of those characters where like it feels like there's no guardrails. Mm-hmm. He's crazy. He can do whatever you want. So so I am so excited. And like but for him, he kind of has like a weird kind of like seductive element to him, but also like if you get close enough, he'll probably bite your face off, which is very fun. He's gonna get a little screamy too, so hopefully.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Ooh. Oh man, they're not ready. I know I played them kind of like, but that was intentional. So he can get suck you in.
Kind of like sultry, kind of right now. Like, he's like very cool and mellow, but he's like the meticulating like dude that's just like, you know, he knows how to press the right buttons to get under your skin. And yes, then sir. It's like, oh my God. Yeah. It is so fun. I love watching sport. You know, it's funny. I don't know what it is, but sports animes just hit different in my opinion. Right. Yeah.
I was actually having a conversation yesterday about this with a good buddy of mine, Alan Lee. He's playing in the new Mortal Kombat right now. He's Shang Tsung. And like, we're talking like, man, like for me personally, like, I feel like it's a travesty that Haikyuu wasn't on like Cartoon Network or
I totally agree. Know?
Mm-hmm. Like, oh God, just print money. Like, it's already.
Could you imagine? Oh, I was gonna say, it's like, could you imagine that series, like the fans alone in that was just ridiculously large. And then could you imagine if it was on TV on top of that?
Oh gosh, yes. Wow. Or like Kokoro no Basket. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like sports animes, especially in the States, mm-hmm. Different. Like, you know,
like, love, like, no, you're totally right. Like, I just love the I love that, the time frame, like, time is weird in sports anime because it's like when you're kicking, because like when they basically explain to you, this is what this person is doing and this is what he did, and then they have the crazy, oh my God, what is he doing? He's charging up and all this different kinds of stuff, and it's all it is. It's like, oh, he just curved the kick. That's all he did.
It's got this aura. He's got the aura. That's what the kids say these days. He got the aura.
I love it. It's like I used to watch what's called Hajime no Ippo. The chapters of reading it is like 7 months long, and it's really three rounds. Yeah. It's three rounds really of boxing. Yeah,
and it came out so epic. Like the first time he did his freaking liver punch, or like like the leading up to the Dempsey roll combo. Like, yep. you're just having a good old time. Like, that's another one. Can you imagine? Like, yes. Put that on Adult Swim.
Oh like, God, yes, that would have been amazing. Like, I don't. Yeah, but this. It's oh man, but it is really, I can only imagine how hard it would be to be like, okay, you gotta pick this banger. Oh, we gotta pick this banger, because they're just rolling out so many different anime series throughout the year.
Sure. I mean, and like, it feels like there's way less studios to work with now too, because like, I don't even know how people procure like different shows or how that works. But like, man, like, to be a fly on the wall for people to make the decisions, just do a little whisper like, get Hajime no Ippo.
That's probably exactly it too. Other than again, though, to be like, be as lucky as 4Kids Entertainment because of how they picked
somebody
up.
Somebody knew. Somebody knew what they had.
I don't think they did.
Oh man, how did it go? Like, I think they ran into a lot of issues. Not so much with like the script writing itself, but like with like certain like regulations for children's television or something. So like they were like forced to make certain changes, which are kind of dubious.
A good way of describing it, you're right. But I love
that's a jelly donut. Like, no, Brock.
He's like, dude, this guy died by a dart, like a suction cup, a poisonous suction cup. It's like, what is this? What's going on here? One Piece, they didn't even know what they had. They just thought they saw it being popular in Japan. They said, hey, we want the rights here in America. They're like, okay, here you go. Then they realize, oh, this isn't for kids.
Yeah.
This is for seven and up.
For sure. But with that said, though, like there's also some cool things with like, especially like I was a huge fan of Digimon back in the day. Yeah. Oh gosh. I can't remember if my first anime experience was either Pokemon or freaking Gundam Wing, which is a completely different time of the day. Like, completely polar opposite.
Do you know how many, like, the level of spectrum that is? Yeah. It's like.
For sure. Like, oh my goodness.
Oh, it's wow. Like. It's either that or, you know, the unedited version of Gundam Wing at late night. It's like. Is there a series that you like? Like, what, did you have a favorite anime series when growing up, or did you like, or something favorite. That you, yeah?
You know, I think I did.
My it doesn't favorite. Need to be one. It could be several. It could be different ones if you have multiple.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely that core Toonami Adult Swim block with Yu Yu Hakusho, which was Oh, yeah, definitely a really like soft spot in my heart, because like that was one of the first ones where my dad was like, this is weird. And he watched it with me. I was like, oh, and you know what? To this day, my dad is the freaking like, he's not closeted about being an anime fan anymore, but he is like, he's the One Piece buff, dude.
Oh, really?
Like, he's been like 1,000 episodes in on the dub.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's all in. It's incredible. And he's just like, have it on the back while he's working. It's like, yeah, Luffy, I love that guy. Which is so funny to me, because growing up as a kid, like this, my dad, he was like, he's the army drill sergeant. And then just, and like, you know what? We're at the point in our relationship where like, I got him a little Luffy figurine for Christmas, and he's got it right there on his little, right under my desk. And it's so funny to me.
Was he Navy or was he just... that's crazy. That's I love it. I love that. Oh my God, that's great. So I remember I think what was it? My friend let me borrow this is how old I am. My friend let me borrow Neon Genesis Evangelion on the old VHS VHS tapes, and I was like, oh, this is what anime is? It's like, I didn't overall, and I know people are probably going to hate me. I was a big fan of Evangelion.
You know, a lot of it, I know it went over my head. Like,
it was insane, yes.
I was like, yay, hi, but like, man, that soundtrack bopped.
It did bop. That's what got to me. Then there's like, enough. It did enough for me to be like, you know what? Let me see what other series are like out there. And then I was watching Dragon Ball Z, and then I was just like, okay. Now I get it. Oh, and then Kenshin. Yeah, I love Samurai.
Oh, yeah. Oh man, yeah, dude. Oh gosh. While we're on that vein, that one. Do you remember one of my favorite series, Outlaw Star?
Oh yeah. Yeah, Outlaw Star. Awesome. Yeah, with the cat girl, and then
Oh man, Gene Starwind.
That was a great show. Like it was, I think it was late night. There was an unedited version at late night, and that's the one that I love to watch. And then there was a regular version. Yes.
Oh man.
Yeah. God, Outlaw Star.
Dude, like, oh gosh, the OG, like the whole thing, especially the promos, because like when you think about it, we had Optimus freaking Prime, Peter Cullen, doing promos for like kids television, like like the hype is you can't describe the amount of hype you would get just watching that block for like a couple hours, or like,
oh yeah,
like, just like, yeah, like Optimus Prime, Peter Cullen, like, and here comes Hamtaro. It's like, what? What? It's insane. Like,
oh man. Like, it is,
I think,
true.
That's part of it, like. Is that block specifically definitely probably made me like want to, like, you know, like really seriously consider like at least trying it out, or like discovering more about it.
That was the end. That would make more sense. That makes sense on like, it just didn't come out of nowhere. It's like you've heard it, and it was just parked in your mind for a long period of time.
It was rent
free.
They got me young.
They got you young, exactly.
Yeah, man.
Okay. I was just also wondering, like, do you have like a, like, if you had the chance or an opportunity, like, do you have any kind of role or dream role that you would love to play, like have a chance to like take your version or your crack at?
Oh man, as far as dream roles, like honestly, when I booked Beat like 3 years ago, I, like, everything else has just been like just kind of gravy or icing on the cake, really. Like when I, like, because it was my first Funimation experience, like first like really experience in dubbing. And getting to play like a character that, like, I literally had the game. It's like a crazy, weird, full circle moment. Mm-hmm. And then like getting to like continue working and being all these shows that I, you know, would not so long, like 4 or 5 years ago, would have been like, I don't know, sold a kidney just to be in the room. Like, it's just weird. And I'm just so thankful. Like, I don't know. Like, whatever role comes next, whatever they think I'm good for. Like, if the audition hits just right, that's the one. Like, because otherwise, I'm so content, and I'm so happy that I'm still like working. Like, it's cool. It's really cool.
So you just very. I mean, like, yeah, you're definitely very. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's cool. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's definitely something I can only even imagine. Like, I mean, maybe, well, would imagine to be like, you know, so.
Yeah, man. It's.
But I'm just saying, your adventure, I mean, like, your story, just like the story of just you from starting to get into where you're at right now, it's already incredible as it is, you know. So
it's kind of weird,
but definitely keep it up. Yeah, but definitely keep up the great work that you're doing. I mean, it's just I loved it. Before I go, that was the last question I had, but what is the best place that like folks could like follow you or reach out or, you know, just say hi to and all that stuff?
Yeah, for sure. So, the best place is probably on Twitter. I've had this little account. It's at Van Barr Jr. And you can check me out there. That's the only one where I actually keep up with it. Check me out there.
That's great. Yeah. Van, it was a pleasure geeking out with you today. It was awesome to talk to you finally. We'll definitely see you with more future awesome roles in the future as well. So
thank you so much. Yeah, hope to keep doing it, and hopefully I don't lose, like, drop an octave just screaming my face off for a second. We'll see.
Yeah, I just can't wait to see your Ryusei. Like you were saying, I was going to be yelling and stuff. So we'll see how that's going to go. Oh man, but guys, if you love the interview I did with Van Barr Jr., you can also listen to this one as well as the other full archive of all the other interviews on our YouTube page, the CFG channel, or go to our main website confreaksandgeeks.com to not miss any of the other episodes of Pop Culture Gems. So once again, this is Davis signing out. Y'all take it easy.